joining Analytics Today, a podcast series that focuses on big data and analytics and latest trends in the digital world. I'm your co-host, Jeremy Roberts. With me always is Samir Khan. What is up, Samir? How you doing?
Hey, Jeremy. It's almost spring right now. How are things going with you?
Yes. It's so, you know, we're down here in Texas, and Texas is one of those weird places to where in the morning it's 40-something degrees and it's freezing. And then by the time it's 1 o'clock, it's like 90 degrees. So you never know how to dress in Texas because, you know, it could be really cold in the morning and then it could have like thunderstorms and all of a sudden be 100 degrees and then back to freezing again. And you're sitting there thinking, this is not natural. So you basically put a lot of clothes in your car everywhere you go, you know. But,
exactly. You know, or probably no
spring is a
at
time
all.
Of change. Exactly, right? So spring is a time of change, and what we want to do was change it up a little bit. I know we haven't had a guest in the last few episodes, but today...
Before we continue, Jeremy, I want to talk about the challenge today sales is facing for the large part, particularly B2B sales. There's been a phenomenal growth in sales platforms and technologies that are available, and what's causing is not only for an entry-level salesperson, but also for a more senior salesperson. It's a very complex environment, and it's overwhelming the sales organization, and this is leading to missed opportunities and subpar performance because they're trying to figure out how do we make sure that all the tools are working in sync, the data is connected, the flow from the lead all the way to opportunity is all connected, and plus the influx of all this AI platforms. We have used a tool that has successfully worked for us in a B2B environment in many different organizations. Apollo AI is the platform that not only comes with a strong outreach platform, but it also includes 250 million contacts. And these contacts are infused with a whole bunch of indicators, sales data, and signals. So this not only streamlines the sales operations, but it also improves the overall efficiencies. Companies like Census, they have seen a significant reduction from a cost standpoint because they have consolidated their stack. There are businesses like Rippling, Deel, and Divi. They have also transformed their sales using Apollo. And if you're ready to try Apollo, there is a free trial available. You can go to our URL, tinyurl.com/salesGPT. Again, it's tinyurl.com/salesGPT. And you can try out Apollo's AI features for free. Over to you, Jeremy.
We have a guest coming on. We'd like to introduce Simon Severino. Simon, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jeremy. Hey, Samir. Hey, everyone. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Fantastic. I've been a big fan of you, Simon. I've listened to a lot of your podcasts, watched your videos, and a lot of stuff that you do in education on the business strategy and consulting. I've been admiring you for quite some time.
Oh, same here. Yeah, fan of your show. It rocks. It rocks.
Thank you. Well, let me give you guys a quick bio of Simon, and that way you can say, oh my gosh, this guy is legit. Here we go. So Simon Severino's created more than $2 billion in additional sales for his clients over the last 21 years. And as an advisor became CEO, he had learned the importance of working on the business more than in it. Now he shares his proven templates with high-ticket entrepreneurs. They reclaim 14 hours per week using the Strategy Sprints method and enjoy sales that soar. So he's the author of Strategy Sprints, a great book. You guys should read that. He's a podcast host ranking in the top 2.5%. He's a TEDx speaker, Forbes contributor, and a triathlete. I mean, it's like, okay, when do you sleep, right? So he's appeared in over 1,300 podcasts. And when he is not supercharging sales, you'll find him swimming, biking, running, and tricking his three kids into outdoor activities so they can escape his annoying, shrinking questions. So you're kind of hardcore. You're kind of a busy guy that does everything. So it's something to where I'm sure when you speak to people and they say, oh, I don't have enough time, you probably sit there and say, no, there's always enough time, right? Yeah.
That's true. When people say I don't have time, I go, well, I have the same amount of time that Elon Musk has, but Elon Musk, he runs 6 companies. So do I really have an excuse not to find time to do one, two, three things that are important for me? And that usually brings me back into, hey, 24 hours is a lot of time.
Exactly. And... So, no, it's interesting. So I think to get into that detail, what we want to do is we always like to start with our guests this first big question. And this is where we want you to take some time to really give us a background, because what our listeners love is to understand your journey, your story. Because all of us started at this, like a terrible job, right? All of us had that first job that was terrible. We worked in a McDonald's, or we were sweeping the back of a warehouse, or we, you know, digging holes in the ground. All of us had a terrible job as our first job. So for me, my first question to you is, where did you start? Like, what was that journey that you had from your career? What was that first terrible job that you had? And then how did you get here? Because most people think, I have no idea how to get here. I'm stuck in this job that I hate. I'm working at the mall and I'm folding clothes for the Gap or something. And how do I get, you know what I mean? How do I get to running a company and doing that? So if you could start from the beginning and get to the where you are today, that would be great.
Well, it's funny. I think in so many hundred episodes, I was never asked this question. So I'm curious what comes out. My first terrible job, you know, I studied philosophy. I didn't study anything with economics. So I studied philosophy and psychology. So basically after majoring, I was broke. That's it. And so I had to find any job, just a job. And I did whatever I could do. So I was an educator to kids that nobody wanted to educate. And that was by day. So by night, I had a second job as an educator or as a DJ, depending the night. And so I was working basically two shifts in terrible jobs, except the DJ part. That was actually pretty fun. Drum and bass DJ. Yeah. and that was a couple years bridge situation, because then I was lucky. I had graduated from the wrong topic, but with the highest grades. And so that was a period in the 90s where the big advisories were looking for people just with the best grades. I don't care what you majored in. I want you just to have the best grades. We want just people who are able to think thoroughly. But what they were thinking, we don't care. We care that they have a structured process of solving problems. That was the 90s in consulting. And so that was my entry ticket. And I entered one of the big consultancies. I did that for 4 years. So I learned the craft from people who had processes. And from there, I then took off and did my own thing.
So then I guess with that, how did you decide to go off on your own? Did you have a mentor? Did you have somebody that encouraged you? I mean, a lot of times you have there's two types of people that manage you, right? The really bad ones, right? That you had the most miserable time working for them. And because you're so miserable, you thought, I could do better than this. And then you leave and you start your own business. Or you had that really great manager who was also a mentor that encouraged you to go out and do things on your own. So there has to be the tipping point. So I guess what was your tipping point to say, I'm going on my own?
I didn't know what was going on at that time, but in hindsight, it's pretty clear. So I had amazing bosses. They were nice and smart and successful and supportive and everything. But for some reason, I did never listen to them. Never. And so that made me,
because you wanted to try something on your own, right?
Yes. There was something in me dancing. Nietzsche would call this a dancing star inside of your chest. When you have a dancing star, there is a song in you that wants to be sung, right? But I didn't know what the song is. And so this is typical for entrepreneurs. We are employed. We are somewhere. We don't feel right. It doesn't feel right, but we don't know what is right yet. Mm-hmm. So I said to myself, okay, I have to go on my own. Started a spreadsheet. I'm a spreadsheet guy. So I started a spreadsheet, what's my monthly costs? I had zero kids at that time, so I had low annual costs. And I said, all right, when I have 50% of that, so when I have 6 months in savings, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
After nice. 4 months, I jumped. That's it.
You couldn't wait. You couldn't wait.
I couldn't wait. Yeah. That's also typical for entrepreneurs. Yeah.
And then I guess the question, my last question, and I'll let get to Samir, but then how did you start your business? So when you started and you founded Strategy Sprints, did you have a mentor? Did you find a team? Did you, was there a group of people that supported you, or did you do one version, you failed, and then tried a different version? I mean, there's so many different flavors of how people did this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't know at the time where to find mentors, where to find others. I didn't know there are masterminds, there are programs. I knew nothing. Mm-hmm. So I started with books, and I started by doing. So I took the clients that were too hard or not interesting enough for others. This is how I entered the market, by finding some little blue oceans in there. For example, nobody liked international teams of a specific industry because they were so demanding and your English had to be at top level. And in Austria, in Italy, where I come from, nobody speaks English at a top level. So I said to myself, I could do this. If I just improve my English, and I'm not afraid of a global team, I'm not afraid of those dynamics. I actually like a challenge. So that might be my thing, global teams. Everybody wanted to have the local big companies as their client. And I said, no, I'm happy with the global teams. Maybe I can be better at that. And so I just started there. Whenever a colleague was overwhelmed with a global team, I said, hey, I can help. Put me on your team. And this is how I entered that market.
So that's fantastic. And kind of going deeper into the strategy sprint that Jeremy was talking about, right? How does a strategy sprint stands out of the crowded field of business consulting? There are so many business consulting, coaching, and now with internet and people having accessibility with AI and everything, every other kid in the block is now positioning themselves as a business consultant. So why strategy sprint?
Yes. So we have now 21 years of iterations, and we build in weekly iterations. My clients' problems are my problems, so I have to solve them. And from those problems, and specifically from projects that went south, we made it our challenge each week to improve that. For example, how do you improve the communication with the client? So we moved pretty quickly to online because you can do that 24/7. We moved to Asana, from Asana to WhatsApp. Always, every iteration was, how can we make it even, what can we subtract in between us so that it became immediate? That was one thing. The other thing was, how can we save them time? Because they are usually just in one industry. So if they're automotive, they are great at automotive. If they are in finance, they're great at finance. But we are in 12 industries every week. So we see stuff that's important for them, and we have it available. So we started saving some spreadsheets, some things that were working for automotive, and having them ready, plug and play ready, so that when finance has a question, I can just plug them. For example, I don't know how to get more referrals. Well, in automotive, this is how they do it. But in my industry, nobody does that. Should we try? So that became another moment. We saved spreadsheets, literally, and Google Docs. We have now 274 of them. It became the Sprint University. Each one, I added a 5 minutes explainer video where I show how I use it. Mm-hmm. And so that became a module in the Sprint University. So now we have direct communication with them. So they have 24/7 access to a sprint coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Jarvis and Iron Man, right? Iron Man is in the field, needs to do something. Hey, should I kick the left door or the right door? They need real-time help.
Right.
And it's not, hey, stop, let's schedule a workshop 3 weeks later in a Marriott in some city where I have to fly to. No. Right now, should I kick the left door or the right door? So sprint coach, boom, you tag them. Immediately, they show up on your phone. And they go, all right, what's the challenge? The subject line. Should I use this subject line or that subject line before I send this email? Hmm. And then he pulls the module from the Sprint University, puts it in there and say, look, these are 20 great subject lines. These are the principles. These are the open rates of these three different types of subject lines. Pick one. So they pick one, they send it. That's one iteration. So we work in small iterations. That's why it's called a sprint. And we have plug and play modules ready to save them time.
Wow.
Got you. And so going back to amazing. That you were mentioning about the technology, right? So in the face of massive technological transformation that's happening right now, what are some of the new trends that the business should be prepared?
Oh, you guys are better in technology than I am. What I am seeing right now in our sprints is that it's super, super helpful to use AI for your marketing activities.
Yes.
So one of the modules is the so-called refinery, the content refinery, like create content. We animate, we invite our clients to post daily on LinkedIn. They go, oh, because we are in the B2B space, right? Mm-hmm. If we were more B2C, we would go more X or somewhere else. But we really love LinkedIn and YouTube for our clients' content creation. And so they go, okay, yeah, but I can't do more than once a week. Mm-hmm. We want them to do it daily. So we show them how to use AI to just be more efficient. So using Poe and Claude 3 specifically. Opus is amazing. So we're using that right now with our clients. Some of them use ChatGPT. Why not? We prefer Poe for its usability.
No, I was going to say that makes perfect sense because it just sprung into my head. I've worked with clients to where I say, hey, you need to start posting on social. So then I work with them and I say, give me an example of a few things that you would do or do some live video because everybody has these amazing iPhones, right? And these things have 4K cameras. And I said, this is a better camera than anything else you can find. Do a live video of yourself, right? Do one of those things. And I watch them and sometimes they're terrible. Sometimes they're very bad in front of the camera. Or they don't know what to say, or it does not serve their business well for them to be in front of the camera, or does not serve them well to try to come up with a tweet that's only a certain number of characters because it just sounds so terrible. And I say, you know what? I want you to be your authentic self. And how do you scale that authentic self? And I think you nailed it on the head by saying you got to use automation, you got to use AI to help take something that's you and to be able to scale your authenticity. You know what I mean? And it sounds weird. It sounds like an oxymoron because I said authenticity and then I said AI, which are two different things. But you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I am with you, Jeremy. I think that AI actually enhances our humanity.
Yes.
Because it takes away everything that a machine can do, a machine should do. It takes away everything that a machine could do that you shouldn't be doing in the first place.
Yeah, it takes away the hard part, right?
Yeah, the boring part, the linear part. But there is still the creative part, like expressing your soul. Like we talked about having a dancing star, a song that wants to be sung. That song is still in you. The AI will not come up with the song. The AI will bring it in a form quicker because editing is the boring part. So I want them to be the expressive function, Then Poe and Claude 3 does the editing. It says, okay, make 5 tweets out of that. It's great at that. And then it says, so we give them literally a couple prompts. And one prompt says, rewrite this in a form that's more engaging and that induces more dopamine in the reader's brain. And so that it does it again. And so you have just more. And that, more that's one part. That's one part. Like, how can we save them time? We are big at saving them time. The second part is, how do you make it a habit? How do you keep them? Because, you know, when a stone is rolling, it's hard to stop it. So we just want to get them rolling. And the way we do that is we put them together with 10 other clients in so-called expansion teams. An expansion team is 10 business owners that they are all committed to daily LinkedIn posting, and they are all committed to commenting on each other. So we put them together in a WhatsApp group, and now they are an accountability partner,
right?
Yes,
yeah, exactly. Nice.
Now
it's like a gym partner.
Yes, it's like a gym partner. And so they start calling each other out. Hey, you didn't comment on mine. Hey, you didn't show up for 3 days. I was on holidays. Who cares? Make something from the ship.
You know what's amazing is that every example that you give comes back to how you actually live your own life. And I feel like you've built this business as an echo or an extension of your own personal life. You started off this podcast by saying, hey, I do all these things. I have a crazy schedule. I'm a triathlete. I do all these things. You should have time to be able to do all these things. You have no excuses. I think you do that same thing for your customers. And it's brilliant. I love how you do that.
If we bring back things, I think in the end, you know, my business is a lifestyle business. I don't run Facebook. You know, I don't run a $1 billion company. So it's just a lifestyle business. It just has to create, I don't know, 500K in profits. So everybody can do that if you just want to create a lifestyle business. One problem is that lifestyle businesses had a bad rep for a while. It was like, yeah, but that's not a real business, right? It's just generating income for maybe one family or... Well, first of all, there is nothing bad about generating income for one family, right? Second, it's never one family because you have five families just from the team, usually. And then you have all the families of the clients that you're helping them solve the problem. So when they go back home, there are better fathers, better mothers, better sisters, better brothers at dinner. So actually, every tiny company creates a different ripple effect of positive impact. So I'm a fan of lifestyle businesses. And the second thing is, they are also utterly scalable. This is something that nobody talks about. You think that, oh, a lifestyle business, okay, yeah, you can sell it for a one-time multiple or one-and-a-half multiple. It's not true. If you start writing down the processes, we call this the business cookbook. If you write down the marketing processes, the sales processes, the ops processes, something that we do with our clients and that I do for my own processes. So when you write them down, now it's absolutely delegatable. My business runs without me. I could go on holidays for 12 months. It's still running. So when you have that, first of all, you have more freedom. You have more fun because now you are enjoying. You are doing the parts that are enjoyable. Being on podcasts like yours is enjoyable. It doesn't feel like work. I'm talking to smart people, amazing people. I could do this the whole day, right? And so that's one part where technology is really helpful. And when you start writing it down, now it's utterly scalable. Now you can start teaching this to others. So the second step was then we started a certification. Now I'm certifying other people to use the Strategy Sprints method. There are people in Canada, there are people in Texas that are using the method now, and they are, you know, Mr. Strategy Sprints in Texas. And I will add Dubai and Paris and Singapore over the next months. This is one way that even a lifestyle business, which was never meant to be a big business, can scale and grow if you want it to scale. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
So I guess with that, when you talk to these different organizations, how do you foster innovation with them? Like, how do you, you know, how do you get them to innovate and to try new things? Because a lot of people come back to their comfort zone and they do the things that they feel most comfortable with. They know they're not going to mess up. So how do you get them to push beyond their comfort level and to push innovation?
If we look at people around us, like I look at my three kids. I have three kids, like 8, 5, and 1. I look at them. What do you think is their degree of innovation from 1 to 10?
100.
Oh, at that age?
Yes. Yeah, yes. It's yeah, 100.
They're at 10. Yeah. They are
crazy. Innovating yeah. all the time. All the time. Yeah. If I leave them 5 minutes yeah. alone, they're innovating the whole room. Mm-hmm. So we are innovative. So my first answer is, how do we make people innovative? We stop keeping them from innovating. That's the first step. So remove everything that's stopping them from innovating, because they are innovative in their essence, in their core. So one thing that we like to do is we ask every single person, for example, if we are coaching one sales team of 15 people, we don't assume that all the 15 people are the same. So we ask them, what's your superpower? What's fun for you in marketing? What's fun for you in sales? What's fun for you in approaching a stranger? Do you enjoy more video or text or calling them or meeting them in person? So we start by what's fun for them and what comes easy to them. Because everybody has that. And that's actually a superpower. One is great with video. The other is great with text, right? And so from that superpower, just give them one big task that builds on that. So you are great with videos? All right.
Let's do that. Yeah.
Land a huge client just by using videos. See you next week. You give a person this task, they will be innovative.
Hmm. Wow.
Interesting. That's great, so because I like that what you're talking about in terms of how do you establish that balance in running the business, right? And because that's one of the biggest traits of the leadership that we see when we have businesses like both Jeremy and I have ran small businesses, and then we know the amount of effort that it requires. So going back to your point on how do you cast a balance between the demands of running a small business, the operations, the employee, you know, the development of those employees, your personal self-development, like what is your strategy to do that?
It is so overwhelming if you don't simplify it, because it's 100 moving parts every week. What should I improve this week? That's why the first step is to really simplify. And the second is just to solve one bottleneck each week. So each week for us has one bottleneck that we solve. And I could literally show you my company by just going to Notion. All our processes are in Notion. And so in Notion, you see, these are the 5 marketing activities. And I told you, multiple countries, many, many sprints running. But it's one page in Notion and you see everything. So if a new person comes in and they ask me, how do you guys do marketing? They see 5 activities. The podcast, YouTube, prospecting, etc. And those 5 activities, they are 5 processes in Notion. Then, okay, and how do you do sales? It's 2 processes. No, 3 processes. One is prospecting, one is closing, and one is referrals. Those are 3 processes explained very simple. And the tool is in there. It's the same tool that our clients get. It's the one that we use. So it's a spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And then there are the operations processes. How do you guys make your clients happy and successful? 5 operation processes and then 3 leadership processes. That's it. On one page, you have a very simple business.
Everything. Yeah.
And because it is so simple, it's highly scalable. And because it is so simple, it is repeatable. And because it is so simple, it doesn't stress me or anybody on my team. If we have a week that feels very stressful, we block a time in the next week. Well, first we try to survive that particular week. But in that same week, we block 90 minutes the week after. We call it simplify. And in that 90 minutes, we go to Notion, we go through all processes and cut them in half.
Interesting.
Because then it's clear that we're doing too much.
That's great. Oh, I love it. So then I'm going to have like a two-part question, right? And then Jeremy, you can ask another question. If my question is, it's two separate audiences. One audience is that is listening right now and saying like, hey, I have a small business or I have this side gig that I'm doing. How can I take the recommendations from Simon and improve my business and apply that directly right after listening to the podcast? What is that one thing that you can tell them, those who are looking to do that? And then I ask my second part once you answer this one.
One thing they can immediately do is to write down how they are allocating their time right now. So basically their daily tasks, and find the one that they will delegate next. Because that's the most important exercise in building businesses, is whatever you were doing today, what's the one thing that you can either automate or delegate? So delegate basically to a software or to a person. And that's the most important exercise. And people can download the tool that I use every day. It's called the Daily Flow. It's on strategysprints.com/tools. So in the tools section, we are open source. So many of the things that I use are available there. And if they just use the Daily Flow, it's tonight they write down, okay, those are the 10 things that I did. And the tool will help them find the one thing that they can delegate next. And it will also ask them, if you would live more freely and more intentionally, what will you do tomorrow?
I like that. I really like that. So the other thing that I was going to ask you is with regards to the people who are looking to start a consulting business, right? A coaching business. And I know the implication of ChatGPT and other Gen AI and robotics, the dependency on a consulting person versus a consulting technology. What is your perspective? Like, you know, they're going to be like, oh, you know, ChatGPT can do that, so why should I start a consulting or coaching business? It's going to get eliminated. Like, what do you tell those people who are thinking along those lines?
So I don't think AI will eliminate consulting. I think a consultant with AI will eliminate everybody else. You still need the relationship. So let me give you an example, because we use both, right? We have the Strategy Sprints coach for one-on-one coaching and group coaching, but we have also enhancements. A spreadsheet is an enhancement. AI is an enhancement. Poe, Claude Opus, those are all enhancements. Like a Google Doc is also an enhancement. This phone is an enhancement, but this phone cannot do my job. Now, parts of the traditional consulting job, like if you think of McKinsey, 60% of what they do is research. That part is gone. But that was never consulting. That was just research. So the research part, gone. If you're a research analyst at a hedge fund, bye-bye. If your job is research, well, step up. Now it's time you learn psychology, you learn business strategy. And those are soft the actual skills. Two things that Emotion. Matter, the soft skills. Yes.
This is so weird because the advancement of technology has actually enhanced the need to come back to soft skills. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we forgot that completely, right? We were so focused on technology in the last few decades that we didn't realize the human potential where it lies. And I think the AI has reconciled that to help us understand that we need to go back to our roots as human being.
Let me give you an example. One team that's sprinting right now is the marketing department of a bank. Now that marketing department saying...
Of a bank, wow.
A bank, yeah. And that marketing department is saying, I am expected to produce much more content, much faster, much better, just because it's technologically possible. And by the way, I have 20% less budget than I had last year. Can you help? And we go, sure, of course, let's go. So first step is, of course, giving them the prompts, etc. So the first month was efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're producing X times more content. But that didn't solve the real underlying problem, right? What is the underlying problem? Is price pressure that banking is necessary, but banks are not. That's the real problem. And banking has now many forms. I mean, there is so many banking on the blockchain. There is so many banking in online banks, neobanks. So there is banking everywhere. Do you really need a bank? Like with a house and like 40,000 people in there sitting drinking coffee? That's the real problem.
No.
That's the real problem. Yeah. 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 I know. So, yeah. Crypto banks, right?
So that's the real problem.
You don't need to have to store money. You can store it in the blockchain.
Every client of a bank is biking past that big, beautiful office and think, who is paying for that office? Oops. It's me.
I am.
Yeah.
So
wow.
That is the real problem. So, of course, enhancing the speed of creating images and creating copy was just the start of that work. And that can be done by AI. But this next problem is, what is our answer to this situation where banking is necessary, but our old world of doing banking is not.
Mm-hmm.
That's a social question. Wow. This is something you don't want to discuss with an AI. This is something that you want to discuss with a guy like me, like you, in a room. And because you want to be careful and you want to think about all the stakeholders that are involved here. What does this mean for different parts of the population? What does this mean for our employees? And you want to involve them in those conversations. Because this is a change and transformation process that can only be done by those actors. And so, yes, we are enhanced by AI, but this core question, what is the right thing to do on an economical level, on a societal level, for our clients, for our employees, those questions, they will still want to discuss this with trustable partners, not with the AI.
So as we start to get in, that's fantastic. And as we start to get into the last question or so, one of the things I'd like for everybody to understand is, if you want to look at some of these offerings or how to engage with your team, go to strategysprints.com/tools. I'm on there right now, and I see strategic value, innovation card, prioritization card, daily flows, customer journey cards. I mean, it's there. And he's giving it away for free. I mean, you give first name,
a lot of
email,
value,
phone number, you download it, and it's free value. So basically, I think what Simon's trying to say, and you've been trying to say for my last question this whole time, is you have no excuse. You have no excuse to step it up. You have no excuse because you have the same amount of time that everybody else does. You just got to apply yourself in the right way. You've got to take things that you can automate or get rid of or give to somebody else. And then, you know, do the things that you have to do yourself, but give other things to other people or other entities and simplify your process. Brilliant. Brilliant. Okay, so yeah, the last
that's
question
fantastic.
Here. Yeah, this final last question is, what is the best advice you can give somebody today outside of just what I just talked about? What's the best advice you can give somebody today? It's like, what can they do today now to start to change their life for the better? What is that one thing? He's like, this is the first step of like the rest of your life. What can you do now that you haven't done yet?
So whatever you're doing, cut the amount of activities in half. So write down what the activities are, cut it in half.
Wow.
I like that.
Simple as that.
Simple, but very, very profound and effective, right? Because I think we do have a tendency to pile up a lot of things And we continue and we to pile up as human being. Maybe that's by design. Yeah, yeah. It is.
And people brag about how many things that they do during the day. And they say, yeah. look how awesome I am because I'm so busy and I have 1,000 things. And what you're trying to say is,
yeah.
no, what makes you more awesome is cut all those in half.
Nice.
I love it.
Very good. Awesome. That's fantastic, Simon. I think it was fantastic. Our listeners are going to truly enjoy it. You shared a yes. lot of value in a very relatively short time. And we tend to bring some of our guests back again. And you definitely fit one of that list and see if we can come up with more advanced questions next time to have meaningful conversation. But thank you very much, Simon, for your time and the opportunity for us to interview on this show.
Thank you, Samir. Thank you, Jeremy, for showing up with consistency over so many episodes for your community, for your audience.
Thank you.
Keep rolling.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank like you. Again, we have last few episodes that we've had or guests, people have suggested guests for us. So please keep on doing that. And outside of that, we'll see you guys next time. Thank you.
See ya. Bye-bye.